You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Visit bpn.fm to discover more.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hi, this is Paul Lazarus. In the 1980s, I produced and hosted a radio series called Anything Goes, a celebration of the American musical theater. Now the Broadway Podcast Network is bringing back these shows. Today, part one of a three-part look at the career of composer-lyricist Stephen Schwartz. Schwartz is best known for his amazing scores for Godspell, Pippin, Working, and Wicked. This program was originally broadcast in 1980, long before Wicked had even been conceived.
In olden days, a glimpse of stocking was a look on to something shocking. But now God knows, anything goes.
Good afternoon and welcome to Anything Goes. I'm your host, Paul Lazarus. Today I'm pleased to present as my guest, composer-lyricist Stephen Schwartz, whose many shows include Godspell, Pippin, and The Magic Show, all of which ran simultaneously on Broadway, and more recently, The Baker's Wife and Working. Join us for the next hour and a half as we talk to Stephen Schwartz by way of a pre-recorded interview and listen to many selections from his scores. And as a special treat, Schwartz will go to the piano himself to play many of his songs, both rare and well-known.
To the beginnings, not like
through the misty eons of time.
Right, not like birth, but when was the first show? What was your first show, ever? Was it high school or college?
Oh no! Oh, you mean really like, way back? I
really
always did shows.
Really, even as a child, you were writing songs?
Oh sure, yeah. Shows, bullying the children in the neighborhood to participate in these things that we charge a quarter for.
And at your house?
I was always, yes, in the backyard or down in the basement. I was always enraged when everything wouldn't go just so, you know. One time I insisted on refunding the money because I felt that the show wasn't up to snuff. This caused great embarrassment
was this
to
in
my
the city?
Parents. No, by this time we were on Long Island in Roslyn.
You told me about the shows you wrote in college a little bit, and that you wrote virtually a show a year at Carnegie Mellon.
Yeah, they had an organization not allied with the drama department at all. In fact, slightly at odds with the drama department often, called Scotch and Soda, which I think a lot of colleges have organizations like that. You know, Harvard has Hasty Pudding, and Northwestern has the YMAU shows and everything.
What was the reaction of people to your stuff then? Obviously, they didn't know what you're going to write in the near future, and they didn't know you as Stephen Schwartz, who wrote Godspell and Pippin, etc. They only knew you as a classmate. How are they reacting to your stuff at that point?
Very, very well. You know, everyone seemed to like it and went around singing the songs and said they were looking forward to the terrible albums that we used to do of the shows.
I know, which I forced you to bring me one.
Yes, there's one song that I went back and listened to them the other day and, of course, was appalled and said, oh, no, I can't. We can't play this and we can't play that. But there is one song in the original Pippin Pippin, which is sort of interesting. It's a song called Begging Milady's Pardon. And this is still, of course, the court intrigue days. This is right off the college recording. And in it, the character who wound up being Irene Ryan, Pippin's grandmother, comes to court to talk to the woman who wound up being Leland Palmer, Fastrada, on his behalf. And it's a very sort of bitchy dialogue. I was interested when I listened to it yesterday, actually, again, because it showed that even then I had an attraction to doing musical scenes. I mean, the whole thing is a musical scene between mm-hmm. the two of them. And I just want to add that I was 17 years old when I wrote this, so people who are listening to it should be forgiving in that regard.
Begging my lady's pardon, hoping I don't seem rude. Busy am I at present, surely you'll not intrude. So you'll forgive if I merely suggest, to save us both grief, my dear, that you permit me to clearly suggest your visit be brief. My dear, you appear sorely in need of a rest, you're creaking in every joint. So I surmise it would be wise if we forget the formalities, dear, and proceed to the point. My lady's pardon, I've a surprise in store. Seemingly you don't know that Charles is away at 4. I cannot blame you for being dismayed. I simply could cry for you. And though I'm sorry, I'm really afraid there's nothing that I can do. If I were able, I'd come to your aid. Of this you could have no doubt. If but I could, I surely would. But I cannot and I won't. And now, dear, will you kindly get out?
I will not press you. I'll not
my lady's pardon, you are not making sense. Pippin has left his subjects, shattered their confidence. Though his decision seemed rather naive, they purr into haunts unknown, leaving the rest of us here to believe he no longer wants the throne. I don't know what he expects to achieve, but his the crown. Adieu, what can I say? He's gone away, and I might add, my dear Bertha, I wish you would go away too.
I will now adjourn, but
ladies' pardon, this I cannot condone. Since you insist on pushing Pippin upon the throne, I'd if you can be banished from court, returning on pain of death. Now I suggest you go make your report while you can sustain a breath. Well, let us hear your next witty retort. Or has your amusement fled? Has it indeed? Get to your steed. Hurry and tell the boy if he returns, he will quickly be dead.
You'll never get away with this, I'll intervene.
My dear, you seem to forget which one of us is queen.
Charles will stop you, he'll be back before too long.
I'll tell him Pippin's done some grievous wrong.
Pippin's done no wrong, he's a harmless pup.
I'll make some up.
You and I will forgo the joy of kissing you goodbye. But let me point out before we say good day that, begging the lady's pardon, I will have my way.
Begging my lady's pardon, from an original cast recording made in Stephen Schwartz's college days at Carnegie Mellon. And that from the original score to Pippin, Pippin, which later became Pippin. And you're listening to an interview with composer-lyricist Stephen Schwartz.
Why did you go for drama at that point? You went to Carnegie Tech, obviously, for a drama degree. Am I wrong?
Yeah, that's correct.
No, that's right. So, I mean, you could have maybe making a choice to go to, let's say, Juilliard for a music degree.
Well, I had been going to Juilliard prep when I was in high school. I used to come in every Saturday and go to Juilliard prep, and I'd had an awful lot of music at that point. I'd been taking piano lessons since I was 7, so that was about 9-10 years by that point, and I'd had a lot of theory and 2 years of composition at Juilliard prep. But I was very lazy when I was at Juilliard. When I was in high school, I used to play hooky a lot and tell my parents I was going off to Juilliard and then go to see the matinee if I can get it for you wholesale. I wouldn't do anything all week long, and then I would wind up scribbling out trumpet parts on the train, and I was not a very diligent student. I regret it now sometimes when my ignorance of orchestration becomes burdensome. I say, if I'd studied then, I would know what the range of the viola was, but it's too late now.
Well, I wanted to ask you, because I'm getting you to play Butterflies Are Free later, how did that happen? Was that your first assignment?
Yeah. That was in 69, so it was, I guess I'd been in the city about 6 months or maybe a little longer than that, because I was already working with Shirley, and she called me up one day. She was at IFA at the time and said she knew of the show that was being done, Butterflies Are Free. She was representing Keir Delay, and they needed a song for it because the guy was supposed to be a composer, and she sent me the script. And I read through it, and this guy was, he was blind, you know, and so I did this little folk song, trying to keep all visual images out of it. That was the only sort of interesting thing and fun thing to do, was to try and do a song which had absolutely no visual images in it. And also, it's a very short song, and also to keep it believable that an amateur writer who didn't know too many chords on the guitar, and I knew Keir was going to have to play it and couldn't really play the guitar, that he had done this song. Of course,
being
an amateur writer.
A lot of people know that song, but don't know that you wrote it, I think.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. I was, of course, delighted. It came along so suddenly, and I did this song, and they called me up and said, you know, we'd like to use this song, and we'll pay you $25 a week if you let us use it. The fact that someone was going to pay me $25 a week to use a song was so extraordinary to me. I was absolutely delighted.
I knew the day you met me, I could love you if you let me. Though you touched my cheek and said how easy you'd forget me, you said, butterflies are free. And so love was forming, I said it wouldn't hurt me if you left without a warning. I said, butterflies are free, and so are we. And you made me understand right from the start, I could hold your gentle hand. never hold your heart. So why the crying? Where are brave words lying? When we both agreed there'd be no tears in our goodbye, we said, butterflies are free. Why aren't we?
Stephen Schwartz at the piano himself performing one of his earliest songs for Broadway show, Butterflies Are Free.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
From what I know of Godspell, it started out at Carnegie Tech, and then you were people who you had known at school didn't even know that you were being brought into
That's it. Right, and I didn't know who they were. It was very strange, and it came up at quite a low point, actually, in my life. I had been working for RCA Records for a couple of years. I got a job working in their A&R department there when I came to New York. I got that through Shirley as well. And that had just come to an end. I'd been there 2 years, and by our mutual agreement, we left, and I had been doing musical direction for a rock musical that was a catastrophe in New York called The Survival of St. Joan, and that had just opened to blisteringly horrible reviews.
I had seen the recording of that, and I saw your name on it, and I wasn't even
sure.
Yeah,
I produced the record, too.
That's right, okay.
And anyway, so those things were, you know, I was there, I had no job or whatever, and I went out, Carol and I went out to my folks' house and for my birthday, which was, this was in March of 71, and I got a call from somebody who worked for Lansbury and Beru. And they had heard the score for Pippin about, maybe 6 months before when I was being trundled around playing the score for people. And they had seen Godspell at the Café La Mama, where it was being done, not really as a musical. There were some songs in it, a couple of which the cast had written, one of which was By My Side, which I liked so much I retained for the final show, and also doing some songs that I think they were doing Laura Nero songs and some other things in places. Mm-hmm. Anyway, they had seen it there, and they wanted to move it to Off-Broadway, but they thought it should be a musical, and they had remembered the stuff I did for Pippin, and they asked me, would I go see it? And
did you know at the time who was doing it?
I had no idea. So we went into the city to Café La Mama and saw this, and there were all these people that I'd gone to school with up there doing their little show. So it was very surprising to me. Of course, I'd known John Michael at school, though I had no idea that he'd done this. And
this is John Michael Treblak, right?
John Michael Treblak, yeah.
Treblak.
He was a couple of years behind me at school.
And he was doing it as a kind of thesis project?
He did it originally, yes, as his what they call a thesis. I mean, you had to do a play. I think it was his graduate thesis at Carnegie Tech, or his senior project. I forget exactly what it was he was doing it for. I guess it must have been graduate, and that's why I was gone by the time he did it, because I'd been out of school 3 years by then, or 2.5 years by then.
So you came and...
Yeah, I saw it, and I liked it pretty well. I remember it gave Carol a headache. And I said, no, I think it was pretty good. She said, I liked it, but it was hard to tell through the haze of pain. And, of course, I would have done anything at that point. I was I thought it was unbelievable that anybody was asking me to write anything. And I went the next week to a meeting up at Lansbury and Veru, and this was in March of 71, and they said, la, 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 and we're going into rehearsal April 11th, and go home and write the score. So that was 5 weeks or whatever, so I went home and started writing.
Day by Day, did you think that was going to emerge from the score so individually?
No, I thought All Good Gifts was the hit in the score.
Oh,
if there was
I'm
one.
Glad to hear that, because that's that really was my favorite song in it.
Day by Day was written because we wanted, I'd always wanted to have an audience sing along. This has gone back to the days when I used to go to Weaver's concerts, you know, and Pete Seeger would say, we're all going to sing on top of Old Smokey together. And I thought that was so wonderful, and they'd never done it in a show, and I always wanted that to happen.
The only time I can think of that actually happened was Once in Love with Amy. It actually became a part of the show that Ray.
Well, we did it with No Time at All too. I mean, finally in the next show we brought down the screen and had the little bouncing ball and
fabulous.
Tried to get everybody to sing along. But what happened in Day by Day was that I tried to make it so simple, and it is just the same thing over and over and over again, that by the middle of the song, if you'd never heard it before, you could sing right along. And ultimately, we abandoned the idea of trying to get the audience to sing along because we felt it was early in the show and too pushy and all like that. Uh-huh. Though they did all wind up clapping along somehow. But I think that simplicity and that constant repetition is what made it be a hit song.
Day by day, day by day. See the
Day by Day, performed by the original cast members of Godspell. You're listening to a pre-recorded interview with composer-lyricist Stephen Schwartz.
You've told me about the shows as you were a kid growing up. Why? I mean, I'm just trying to figure out what makes a kid want to do that. In your case, was there anyone in your family in connected
nope.
with
Nope, I theater? Have no idea. My folks, you know, we live near to the New York area, and they used to take me to shows.
Do you remember the first show you saw?
Yeah, the first. Now that you mention it, I can see where it came from. Actually, the first stage thing that I ever saw was the stage show at the Roxy in the days when there was the Roxy. Mm-hmm. I don't remember the movie anymore that it was just my mother took my sister and I to see, but I couldn't believe that there were. I just was entranced seeing the stage show. And then shortly thereafter that, a man who lived next door to us was a composer. His name was George Kleinsinger. And he had written a record, actually, called Archie Mehitabel, an adaptation of the Don Marquis stories. And that was made a Broadway musical in 54 or 55, called Shinbone Alley. And I did go to see that. So that was the first show that I saw. Mm-hmm. And then I had the bug, so I kept going to see shows, musicals mostly. And
he's the kind of kid who ran home after seeing a show and sat down at the piano trying to figure out what they were.
Oh, sure, of course, yeah.
That's interesting, that you live next door to someone who writes. That interests me because it seems a pattern for several other people,
yeah.
too, in a lot of ways.
I think that's why finally my parents got me the piano, too. Uh-huh. I said, you know, I really would like a piano, and I was always over at the Kleinsingers noodling on their piano. And finding
you weren't pushed to practice, were you? You were.
Oh, pushed to practice? Oh, yes.
Oh,
I had to be wheedled and bribed and cajoled. I hated to practice.
Uh-huh.
My laziness was with me from a very early age. I used to love to play the piano, and I would sit for hours playing the piano, but I really didn't like to practice what I was supposed to be practicing, and I would constantly have fights with my parents, and my mother would say, I would say, that's it then, I'm quitting, I'm not taking piano lessons anymore, and she would say, fine, all right, you call Mr. Harrell, and you tell him that you're quitting, you're not going to take lessons, and you won't be into your lesson next week, and of course I could never face that making that phone call, so I'd say, all right,
I'll practice.
They used to say, if you practice and I hear for a month that you've done very, very well, then I'll take you to see the revival of South Pacific at City Center. I mean, they went through all this art.
The carrot, the great carrot.
The carrots and sticks, where there was a lot of both of those.
Oh, amazing. We talked about Pippin and how it went through all these various manifestations and got to Broadway. I was just curious about one thing, because when I saw it, I was fortunate to still see it when Ben Vereen was in it. How was Ben Vereen found for Broadway? I mean, because of Jesus Christ Superstar? Or?
Yeah, I guess Bob had seen him in Superstar and brought him in. He came in and sang Alfie and something from Superstar, and he was just wonderful, of course. And
yeah.
We all went back to Stewart's office and said, well, I mean, we've got to write a part for this person. And we wound up combining five roles, actually, and that's when the leading player role evolved. Because
I was wondering about that, because with someone like Ben Vereen, it would seem like it would come after you found him.
That's exactly what happened.
That's what I thought.
There was a troupe of players, but there were about four or five roles that Ben wound up taking all of them, and they began to be assimilated into that conception.
Did you actually tailor songs to his own abilities?
No.
Not really?
No. I would, frankly, I'd do it more now than I did it at the time.
Uh-huh.
The score was pretty well done by that point, too. And none of the songs that were added were for Ben.
I've never seen anyone as triple talented as he is. I mean, he literally can do it all. I mean, there are other people that good, certainly, but I don't think I've ever been as impressed with an individual performer as what all the things that he was doing in that show.
Yeah, he's a major talent.
Sweet summer evenings, hot wine and bread. Sharing your supper, sharing your morning. Simple joys have a simple voice who says, oh, why not go ahead? And wouldn't you rather be a left-handed flea, a crab on a slab at the bottom of the sea, than a man who never learns how to be free, not till he's cold and dead? Well,
I'll sing you a story of a sorrowful lad. Had everything he wanted, didn't want what he had. He had wealth and pelf and name and fame and all of that noise. He didn't have a none of those simple joys. His life seemed purposeless and flat. Aren't you glad you don't feel like that? So he ran from all the deeds he done, he ran from things he just begun. He ran from himself, which is mighty far to run. Out into the country where he played as a boy. He knew he had to find him some simple joys. He wanted someplace warm and green. We all could use a change of scene. Sweet summer evenings, so full of sound.
You've been listening to part one of a three-part look at the career of legendary composer-lyricist Stephen Schwartz. Anything Goes Backstage with Broadway's Best is produced and hosted by Paul Lazarus. For more information, visit anythinggoespl.com. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to rate and follow us. Thanks for listening.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.